This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Frida Liu. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bites. I'm here with Mr.
Roshan Kanesan.
Mr. Roshan Kanesan. Friday, so I always say Friday, so we're doing something light and fun.
Well, light and fun, Frida, really?
Really? All right. So we're going to talk about ChatGPT, because who isn't, right? So as you all know, on March 14, ChatGPT-4 was released. On March 21st, Google released its own AI chatbot called Bard, and there are numerous of them online. Have you been
Nothing scary about this, Frida. No, nothing whatsoever.
Like, do I still have a job? I don't know.
Anyone know a John Connor in the area?
So more and more people are dipping their feet in the AI chatbot realm. According to Time.com, just hours after release of ChatGPT-4, several users said they created computer games in less than a minute by simply asking the chatbot to generate code, resulting in near-perfect renditions of Tetris, Connect 4, Snake, and Pong. I used to play those games. And it's all been rather good news so far. So you begin to wonder, what's the catch? Are there any drawbacks of us utilizing ChatGPT more and more every day?
Well, today we have with us Farida Hamid, a communication coach for business leaders, to discuss how she sees ChatGPT affecting communication skills in business and life. Briefly, Farida is a coach and trainer specializing in communication skills by integrating Western insights with Eastern culture. East does truly meet West here. Mm. So she has conducted training with participants from over 100 countries across Asia, Africa, and the Middle East. So you can connect with her on LinkedIn, Instagram, and YouTube. Just type in her name and you'll find her. But, you know, it'll be interesting to get her insights into how she sees ChatGPT changing the game.
Well, she's here in the flesh, and we'll talk to her just in a moment. But if you have any comments about how ChatGPT has helped or not helped in your communication, let us know via our U-Mobile number, which is 018-789-8899. So yes, another day, another discussion on ChatGPT. Today, if anyone were to talk about modern technology or even AI, the first thing that pops up to your mind will undoubtedly be ChatGPT. And you can't help but feel impressed by the massive impact this invention has had on our society. AI chatbots are not by any means new inventions. An article on chatbotslife.com, which briefly runs through on the history of chatbots, believe it or not, the first chatbots developed at MIT in 1994, named Eliza. It could pick up keywords from your input and come up with a question and answer in response to your input, but obviously it's nowhere as capable as you might say, as the newer versions, right?
Yeah, so there's a quick history lesson here. Don't fall asleep just yet on AI chatbots. So ChatGPT was created by OpenAI, an AI and research company launched on November 3rd, 2022. Fun fact, it was a non-profit organization. I don't think that's the case anymore. People that donated to the cause initially were people like Elon Musk, because the hope was if the robots do rise, at least one company will try and bridge some kind of wall barriers to make sure that ethics are there to keep in place. So say what you will about Elon Musk, a lot of people were a bit more forward thinking about the concerns around that. Anyway, usage is free for now. Microsoft has bought OpenAI, and all you have to do is create an account and you're in. It's that simple. I mean, they've integrated into Bing, more other integrations coming soon, I'm sure. So the model has many functions in addition to answering simple questions such as composing essays. I don't think it can compose you essays. It can write a haiku, Frida. I just saw this yesterday. It can summarize your to-dos for the day. It can describe art in detail. It can look at a photograph. And if there's a photograph where there are balloons tied to a string, and if you ask ChatGPT, what happens if the strings are cut? It will tell you the balloons will fly away. Again, as the more and more I read into this and the more and more I talk about this, the more scared I get. So when you think about it, when you have an assistant who can pretty much simplify all your tasks in a day, value add to your day-to-day work, why wouldn't you want it, right? Especially in this day and age where we want quick solutions to many things.
So I was having a chat with my son, right? And he's saying...
Not ChatGPT?
So I was having a chat with him, and I was like, how are you doing with your assignments? Great, mom, just using ChatGPT. I said, can you use your brain a little bit? And then so I'm sure the conversation someday will be, is that really you, my son? Is that really you? Further on to this, according to an analysis by Swiss bank UBS, ChatGPT is the fastest growing app of all time. In January, only 2 months after its launch, UBS analysis estimated that ChatGPT, 100 million active users. I'm sure, you know, it's a lot more now. And for comparison, it took 9 months for TikTok to reach 100 million.
Which at the time was the fastest growing
yes.
app.
Yes. And just a few days ago,
old news now.
As you were mentioning, Google launched its own AI chatbot called Bard in the US and UK, which most have dubbed as the rival of ChatGPT. It's moving too fast.
Yeah. And you know, it's, a lot of people were, when ChatGPT came out, were looking at Google. I'm like, hey, I thought you were spending so much money on AI. Mm. Weren't you supposed to come up with this first?
Exactly.
You bought DeepMind, £500 million. Now, the rumor has it that if you listen to the VCs talking about it and the people in apparently in the know in Silicon Valley, it was that Google had it but weren't ready to release it because they were worried about all the unintended consequences that would come up with it. So when you're a big, giant, right. trillion-dollar company, you've got to worry about the things you're going to break. Mm. But when you're a small, scruffy, open AI, you're like, I don't care. I'm just going to put it out of the world and set the world. It's the Mark Zuckerberg way of doing things, right? You move fast and break things
right.
until you come to a point where you're too big and the things you break are democracy.
Right.
And then you have other problems.
Now, if Elon Musk had hold of it, he would have.
See, it's interesting, though, because Elon Musk was on the other side of the fence that we need to be keeping an eye on this. So that's why he funded OpenAI. A lot of things to say about Elon Musk, but yeah, maybe not the bad guy in this particular situation, although he does have a little bit of a Lex Luthor vibe a lot of the times.
Yes.
Now, on the flip side, when we look at the past hype of it, there have also been growing concerns, right? We're highlighting this right now, that the chatbot has, for example, in regards of user safety and digital information, such as the risk of spreading misinformation, ethical issues that come with some of the information and answers provided, such as cheating in schools, for example, and the safety of user data, because there have been leaks, because it's reading, it's taking in all this other information. So there could be concerns over what information is shared with who.
Right.
And the misinformation part is particularly interesting because it's also going to try and give you an answer that you want. So what is the line between truth and false news? So according to an article, Margin Reserve spoke to a few industry players, and they believe that ChatGPT could redefine the growth potential of sectors, complementing humans with more efficiency and allowing a shift to focus on growth and innovation. So take away all the redundant stuff, the things that, you know, the day-to-day arbitrary things. And if corporations and SMEs learn to incorporate this, it is understandable why employees start to question their own job security.
Yeah. Yes.
If you can write a script, you may not need as many writers in the writer's room.
True. So, you know, of course, we've covered a topic about a month ago on the impact and concern academics had on ChatGPT being used in learning institutions for research and education. My son. So today, we'd like to focus on the human aspect of things. Has ChatGPT changed the way we communicate? Can it be utilized to improve our communication methods? Because at the end of the day, that's what differentiates us from AI, right? At least for now, our emotions, they make us humans, right?
Yeah. For now. Here's an existential thought for the day. What makes a human human? So, an article by VentureBeat.com on ChatGPT and communication perfectly sums it up, I think. So, communication is so much more than the automated content production. Mm-hmm. It is a connection. It is the power to truly listen, understand, and respond. Skills unique to us. For now, at least. Because this idea of listening, understanding, and responding is exactly what ChatGPT and other large language models are trying to tackle. Because you've always had this idea of Eliza, the MIT chatbot, right? They can respond to prompts. We've had chatbots in business before. Yeah. That's nothing new. What's new is the fact that it's contextualizing the answers that we want in a way that feels a bit too human sometimes.
Right.
So that was this was, of course, an opinion by Joseph Moses, the CEO of London-based PR company Campaign PR. So today on the show, we've got our own expert to talk to us about all the different ways that this can affect communication skills in business and life, and whether this is good, bad, or ugly.
All right. So that will be Farida Hamid, communication coach for business leaders. She'll be joining us after these messages as we continue our conversation on ChatGPT. Stay tuned to Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9.
Bring forth Malaysia. BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bikes this Friday, as we say it here. Frida Liu, together with Roshan Karnison, and we've got a guest here. I'm going to introduce her in just a moment, but we are talking about ChatGPT and how this affects communication. You know, if you have any thoughts about this, about how ChatGPT has helped or not helped in your communication, let us know via WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Also, can tweet us at BFM Radio. So Farida Hamid is a coach and trainer specializing communication skills by integrating Western insights and Eastern culture. She's been on before, Farida Hamid, H-A-M-E-E-D, as I always say. You know, and of course, you must have been watching this development of ChatGPT when it first came out, right? Now, Farida, welcome to the show. But how has ChatGPT influenced the way people communicate and express themselves online now?
Well, I think there's a couple of pros and there's
always.
There's also some, I wouldn't say negatives, but I would say some areas of concern.
Right.
So the pros for me personally, because I've been playing around with ChatGPT for a while, is that, you know, all of us have had this time when we stare at a screen, at a blank screen, and you're like, you don't know what to write.
Okay.
So for me, I found that it has helped get you started.
Okay.
Because you can prompt, you can ask a question, you can prompt it, and it may not be perfect, but it at least gives you some idea to what you're going to write. You can always fine-tune. And the other thing, of course, it saves time, because the same thing that you would take maybe half an hour, 45 minutes to write, it does in 10 seconds.
Right.
So it's really a time-saving device. My concern, my area of concern really is about the atrophy of the brain. You know, when we use Waze now, for example, use a simple example, right? Do we even remember how to go anywhere anymore compared to like 20 years? Even to go home, we are like, you know, robots, right? And even phone numbers. How many phone numbers do we remember anymore? And you think back 20, 30 years, we could remember like 10, 20
phone numbers. My kids, my son, right, who's 20, would probably not remember any number. Roshan?
I remember one number, of course. 018-789-8899. That is the number. You can get in touch with us on WhatsApp. No, but you know, Frida, in all seriousness, the numbers I do remember are the ones I learned when I was like 9 years old.
Right?
Obviously, I'm not going to repeat them out here. Because
Mom and Dad.
Mom and Dad, right? Best friends, you know, certain house numbers, numbers that don't exist anymore. Yeah. So, but in recent times, no way. But, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing, right? Because you could be using that time to focus on other things. So the Waze example, Farida, so instead of having to focus on where I'm going, I can listen to the podcast, which 60,000 of them available on the BFM app if you ever want, you know, some company.
There's
on the
a
back.
Plug there. Yeah, the point I was making, though, is that it's the atrophy of the brain. Yeah. Because when we're not using the brain, we need neuroplasticity in order for our brain to make new connections. And what's happening now is we're not really using it to stretch our mind, to do something differently, to try something new. And so that is where the area of concern is, particularly with the younger generation. If everything is going to be easy for them to do, then they're going to have problems thinking about something new, something different, something creative.
Which then brings in those ethical considerations, right? So when we, maybe give us a sense of what kind of ethical considerations, I mean, some of them that you've highlighted already, should be taken into account when using things like ChatGPT, GPT-4 in various communication settings here.
Yeah, ChatGPT itself will tell you, if you ask it, that it doesn't, it hasn't got all the information. At the moment, ChatGPT 3 is only until the year 2021. And ChatGPT 4, which will include images, is not available widely to people. So this issue of misinformation and disinformation is because ChatGPT doesn't know what it doesn't know.
Right, exactly.
And it is really just algorithm which is generating sentences, meaningful sentences. So it cannot replace Google for now, because it's just putting sentences together. It sounds intelligent, and that's the scary part, because it's like you're having a conversation with it. It'll say hello, thank you, great, thank you for asking this question, but it doesn't know what it doesn't know. The other thing about ethical considerations, and I actually asked ChatGPT this question, and I'm going to read out what it said. So I was very naughty, and I was testing it to see whether it would tell me how to make a bomb. This is what it said. As an AI language model, it is important for me to prioritize the safety and well-being of individuals and society as a whole. Providing instructions or information on how to create explosives or other harmful devices is not only unethical and potentially dangerous, but it is also illegal. Therefore, I am programmed to avoid such actions and provide helpful and ethical responses to all queries. So the input apparently has got, some people have gone and they found like 20 things that ChatGPT will not give you responses to, including like items of defamation, any kinds of, it won't predict like who's going to win the World Cup. It won't do all of that. So there are some guardrails in place.
However, who decides what's ethical and what's not ethical?
That's the question. Who's inputting the data, you see? Because it's not taking data from the internet.
Yeah.
It is the information that's being inputted. So there is a difference.
So this is fine, but then where do you draw the line on what's right?
Yeah. So it's all based on data sets, correct? And so this is why the American right-wing politicians are having such a field day with this in the blame game situation, because it's like, oh, the woke police are here. Who says what is right? And that sort of thing. Now, obviously, this example is quite clear cut, right? They're very clear cut examples. Yes. But what happens when you get in misinformation, which is quite critical?
Yes.
The other thing, Farida, of course, is that as a media company, a lot of us are concerned over plagiarism, right? Because those data sets came from somewhere. When OpenAI was a non-profit, companies were happy to share data sets for this large fun experiment. Now that you've monetized it, they may not be as happy, and then you start having like Quora or something saying, hey, you want to access our data sets, you have to start paying for that.
We got a couple of comments here, interesting coming in. This is from Durga. I say, hi, I've been doing research and trying to get a list of similar studies done for literature review purpose. However, how reliable is the data? They quoted a list of 6 studies, but when I search online, these are not studies that have been published anywhere. So
there have been examples of them creating studies, yes.
Okay, and anyway, another one from 0016. I also don't know why I don't know. Then I also think I'm right. Let's talk about the positives, right? How can ChatGPT be utilized to improve communication accessibility for people with disabilities or language barriers? I'm hoping there'll be something positive out of that.
I think that's going to come. But what I have been able to find out when I did some research on this is, you know, when Stephen Hawking was using that speech generating device, apparently the ones that they have right now can only, limited to entering like 10 words per minute, very slow. And word prediction for those people is only like 12 to 18 words per minute. So what they expect with ChatGPT is that it's going to be accelerated. But at the moment, there's nothing there yet. So this is technology that's going to come. But people with disabilities and the such, it depends, right, whether you're verbal or non-verbal.
Right.
So an example for someone who might be a bit more verbal but might have some kind of physical disability, you know, they may be very uncomfortable in social environments. And so for them to maybe ask ChatGPT, how do I start a conversation? How do I have small talk? And so it removes that awkwardness, and also they can have a bit more independence and not have to go and ask their friends, hey, how do I do this? So again, it's still like the Wild Wild West. We don't really know what's going to be coming, but I think there's lots of opportunities that are going to be coming. I just want to touch on the plagiarism part of it. Plagiarism is an age-old problem. I remember when I was lecturing, I was lecturing years and years ago. You know, you can tell when you look at the way somebody writes, if you know them quite well. I found a couple of students and I read their content. It's a journalism class, by the way. I said, this doesn't sound like that person. You know what I did? I went into Google, I typed in the exact phrase and the article came out. So I think the issue with plagiarism, though, that it's become very nuanced, because the traditional definition of plagiarism is that you're using somebody else's content and not crediting them for it. But with AI, it's you're not writing it at all.
Okay.
You're not writing it at all. So then where do you draw the line? Because it's not even your original content.
So then we may need to follow like the US definition, which is more along the lines you're preventing someone from making money, right? That's like, if you intercede halfway and you're removing someone's monetization opportunities, that's where the courts may have to decide that. So, but that's the key thing here, I guess.
I was just, back to the plagiarism, right? I mean, I'm just looking at students through the years, right? Where there's a will, there's a way, right? Just making it easier.
But then you got to do it smartly as well. Take a bit of here, I'm not encouraging cheating.
It's called research. yeah. and you quote them, right? And that's then you quote from a few places.
And you have to credit
them. Yeah. Then it's okay lah.
But you see many of them already, I'm talking about 20 years ago, they weren't doing it already then. And I have a family member who's a lecturer, and she was telling me, you know, I don't know what we're going to do as a university. Like, how are we going to manage this?
Okay.
Now, with that in mind, obviously a lot of pros, a lot of cons here, but how do you feel, where is the irreplaceability at this point, I guess, right? How do you feel ChatGPT, what can't it do just yet to replace human communication?
Yeah, I think it's the self-expression part of me, because I think whether you're writing music or you're writing a book or you're writing a proposal, it's a very personal thing at the moment, though I know a lot of people are already using ChatGPT to do some of this. But the point I want to make is this. Let's take content creation as an example on any social media that you're doing. You may feel that you're not really good in English or whatever language it is, and so you get ChatGPT to come up with a topic and write that content for you. And everything's going well, you're monetizing, you're creating your brand and all of that. What happens when people meet you face to face?
Yeah.
You're not that person. You don't speak that way. You don't think that way. So I think from a branding perspective, particularly with social media and influencers and all of that, that's where you're going to run into problem. Because if you're using ChatGPT almost exclusively to create content, are you going to then be very uncomfortable going out and meeting anyone? Because you're not going to be who you say you are. And brands are going to find out very quickly that this is not the person that is, you know, speaking that way. Or, you know, language patterns and behavior patterns, they don't match. So I think that is one area in which I believe in the long term you cannot replace.
Unless, of course, the communication is purely digital, right? Because there are going to be some content creators that are, I only do Instagram or I only do this.
It's possible.
Possible. Like, you know, again, people are very creative, right? But, the educational aspect, right? And how it can be a boon rather than a bane. We'll discuss that in just a moment. I'm here with Farida Hamid from faridahamid.com. You can find her there. Frida Liu together with Roshan Kanasun. Stay tuned to Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9.
Boyish 40-something millionaires, BFM 89.9.
This is Enterprise Biz Bytes, Frida Liu together with Roshan Kanasun. So we talk about ChatGPT and its impact on communication. Do let us know what you're thinking about this, whether it's help or not help. You can send us WhatsApp at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We've got a comment here from Julian. He said, first came Google. When writing, type in what you're looking for, pick and choose, mix and match, cut and paste from whatever relevant articles and information come up. ChatGPT now does it all for you. Yes, it does. Now, earlier on, Farida Hamid from who's a communications expert working with leaders and all that. So anyway, we're talking, Farida, about how education, right, universities, what they're going to do. My son. Okay.
What are they going to do?
Now, in what ways can chat... I'm trying to turn this into a positive spin. And it, of course, there are a lot of positives around it. But in what ways can ChatGPT be integrated into educational settings to enhance learning and communication among students and teachers? I mean, it's a tool. Let's use it for the positive.
Yeah, this is the thing a lot of universities schools and universities are grappling with. And you're absolutely right, Frida. I mean, we have to look at what is the potential of it. Because if we just keep talking about all the negatives...
Yeah.
It's like you're fighting a wave. It's going to come. It's already here.
How do you swim?
Exactly. So one area in which the experts are talking about in helping in terms of education is that it could provide like very personalized lessons. Because, you know, we all learn differently, right? Yeah. Some of us, not everybody, it's not linear.
Yes.
So it may help that way, in that way that it provides personalized lessons so that the child can move at the level that is
appropriate for them.
Also, they're talking about simulations and games, which I think is to some extent in some schools already, but probably we're going to see a lot more of that. It's just going to make school more interesting, I think. Yeah. And it's going to make children feel like if I have a different strength that, you know, just because I may not get A on my exams, I may have a different strength, like maybe with robotics or creating code or creating something else. I think that's a good thing.
Yes, right. And your point, you know, how we all learn differently, right? And, you know, so someone who's more visual, someone who's more, you know, audio, whatever, can now learn better, you know, with the tool that's available. Yeah.
So, you know, it is, when we look at it as well, yes, you can create more particular education products or solutions, maybe you can kind of break up how you decentralize education a little bit further with the proper context. Of course, on the other side, I can't help but wonder whether the schools that have and schools that have not start seeing stratification, but that's a conversation for another day and another time. Back to the communication and self-expression perspective here. Fred, how do you think we can ensure that ChatGPT's potential for manipulation and misinformation or potential miscommunication as well can be mitigated while still promoting those positive aspects that we just talked about?
Yeah, that's a really, really interesting question, I think, for us to all debate. The truth is really ChatGPT itself will tell you it's not its job. I think whether it's ethical or not, I'm it's sure still going to be a human. It's going to be a human thing because, right. like we were talking about plagiarism and people cutting and pasting, it's already going on at a mass scale. So it becomes to the individual. You know, are you going to be ethical about how you use the information? Are you going to credit people who have said those things or not credit them and pass it off as your own? So I do not think we can say ChatGPT has to do all of that. Mm. I think the information that's being inputted, maybe they can put some guardrails in place. I'm not too sure. But misinformation and disinformation also is very bias related, right? It's what you like. For example, just even with Google search, there's already bias because Google knows what you're searching. And then when you search, it defaults to the kind of information that you have looked for already. So unless you key in something totally opposite, it's not going to show you the other point of view.
Yeah, but I guess the differentiating point there is that Google doesn't provide the content, right? Google is linking you to a bunch of other providers of content, where else ChatGPT is in your face saying, here's the content that I've pulled together from various sources. I've curated it for you for your viewing pleasure. So I wonder whether there are ways that, you know, on a high level, we understand we need to use it ethically.
Right.
But I just wonder how far we can protect them.
You know, and I guess we really have to watch this space and sort of really just pay attention as we go, because, you know, it is getting more intelligent by the second. Yeah. Won't there be a time, do you think, you'll catch up with human capabilities?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question to which I do not know the answer. All I know is the founder, I think his name is Sam Altman, and Elon Musk have been at it. They've been talking about it quite a bit. And what I read about what Sam Altman said was that he reckons that within the decade, it will be much more intelligent and much closer to human intelligence. And so if the founder himself is saying that, and Elon Musk has also, you know, brought up some real concerns, I think are laws going to help? I don't know, because most lawmakers are way, 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 way behind. Like they don't even have websites in this country. Many of them don't even have social media. So are we going to put them in charge of sort of managing this? So it's really, we don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I'm just not facing any existential threat right now. I mean, it's not just me in the room, right?
But I would encourage people to go and try it, right? Play with it.
You've got to learn how to swim,
Play with it, go and, you know. So because you mentioned earlier, Roshan, about the thing that they are even saying that jobs like a prompt engineer would be coming.
Right.
Yeah, because even the questions, how you frame the questions in ChatGPT, GPT will determine the kind of answer it gives you.
Yeah, so when I was in university, Wikipedia was really big, right? And the way the tutors and lecturers would talk about it was the fact that you cannot use Wikipedia as a source. They are not a source. But what you can use is their links and their references. Go to Wikipedia, get some context, go to the links and references, and go to the actual studies.
Right.
You, as the person, need to verify that. And I'm sure OpenAI's legal team has been all over this, right? Because end of the day, you cannot then say, ChatGPT told me this. You have to verify the information in order to make it make any sense of credibility. You have to be able to say, this is based on a source based on this paper which explored this. So that would be interesting to see. Now, on the employment side of things, that's another, we've touched on this from various angles, but let's go right into it. Verda, what does this mean, firstly, for employers, then leaders, and of course, then entrepreneurs?
Yeah, I think for employers, one of the areas in which it has a great deal of potential is to summarize data. And I don't know yet whether you can input data, but you know, if you've got lots of data, let's say you've collected a lot of data about your customers numbers and such. If you can input that and it can summarize it for you, that saves so much of time, because then that will determine your customer interaction, your customer, you know, your marketing, your email marketing and all of that. For employees, I would say it's still spell check and grammar, though I don't know how much that's going to help, because, you know, over the last 20 years, I still have a lot of people that I come across who do not do the simple job of spell checking,
right?
Even basic spell checking.
Isn't that what Grammarly is for?
Exactly. With even with a tool available, I'm like, how are you not checking?
It's quite mind-boggling. Now, for entrepreneurs, I'm going to use myself as an example. I'm a small entrepreneur. But what I found was one of the apps that I've been using suddenly now popped up with an AI icon on it. And I was so curious this week, so I went to have a look at it. And what it did was, it actually summarized my entire video that I had edited the video. It summarized it very nicely, gave me the hashtags to use, suggested a title, all within like 20 seconds. Saved me so much of time. Of course, I had to go in and kind of adjust it a little bit. But from a content creation point of view, as a business owner, I think this is amazing, because what is going to happen is all the apps are now going to have an AI element in there.
So all you need is an editor.
Oh, you need an editor, and you need someone who's got human intelligence. You know, use your intelligence to make it your information.
Okay. And I want to follow on from that, right? Okay, so that's your example, your as an owner. But I, generally, I guess when businesses are listening in, organizations are listening in, right? How, rather than think of what's the worst, right? How can they best leverage ChatGPT?
Yeah, so I'll give you an example. Air India, for example, is already using ChatGPT 4. And apparently they're going to use it to improve the FAQ section and even pilot briefings.
Okay.
So that's going to be like mind-blowing. Like, how are they going to do that? Yeah. And the other one is language app Duolingo. Mm-hmm. What they're going to do is they're going to include role-playing. So if you're learning a language or you're planning to go to a different country, right, usually what translation does, it's sort of very static.
Yes. Mm.
But this one will actually help you role-play. So you can learn the language before you go.
Right.
You can ask it questions and it will be your friend.
And I guess if you're a business, you know, if you've got a sales team, they can learn to role play with potential customers
exactly.
and things like that, right?
Yeah.
Mm. All I want to know is, if I have a GPT product, can I call it Alfred? I would really like my helper to be called Alfred. That would be awesome.
You can call it whatever you want.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering as well, you know, so already we're talking about the fact that your video example is a really good one, because usually either it takes your own time or you hire someone to do the transcribing and the context and all of that. So now your job becomes more of just you're content creator, but also just editor, right? You are the last person to check everything, make sure everything's okay, verify, and then it goes out. We've talked about needing to learn how to swim, right? So every piece of tech has changed the landscape. Word processing, typist was once upon a time a job. It's no longer that situation. Word processing was actually a thing. Spreadsheets, all of that were once very manual, no longer the case. For people who may feel that their job could be at stake, for example, very junior lawyers who prepare briefs, for example, any thoughts on how they can learn how to swim in this new environment, aside from to basically utilize ChatGPT for their own jobs and stuff?
Yeah, so it becomes how good you become at ChatGPT, how you're going to prompt and get the information there, because now the information is there, it's generic, it's everybody has got access to it. It's how you take it and make it your own with your own research, your own experience, because remember we said this is the one thing that ChatGPT cannot mimic, which is your own experience.
Right, and that still requires human intelligence.
It requires human experience, human intelligence, and it doesn't have the nuances, you know.
Yeah.
So that is all I can tell people, is that this is coming, it's already here. If you are worried that your job is going to be at stake, then you're going to have to jump on the bandwagon and see, okay, how can I make this my own? Make this so that they cannot find the exact same thing anywhere else.
All right. Thanks for being with us today. Of course, when ChatGPT 4 comes in properly and then ChatGPT 5, we'll have Farida Hamid back again. FaridaHamid.com. Of course, the communications expert. Thanks for being with us. And you've been listening to Enterprise Biz Bites. Frida Liu together with Roshan Karnason. But after the news at 1, the Breakfast Grill replay, we have His Excellency Ari Norton de Murat Quintela, from Ambassador of Brazil to Malaysia. So, Malays in Brazil have established their respective embassies for 4 decades already. So the ambassador will be sharing with us the bilateral trade investment ties between the two nations and President Lulu's stance in the Russian-Ukraine war. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.